Hi, Soon.
Hi, Sarah.
I'm Sarah Posner, and this is The Posner Show. And with me today is Mehsoon Zayid. She is a comedian, an actress, an activist, a writer. You can check out everything that she does at her website, Mehsoon Zayid. No, just Mehsoon.com.
Just
Sorry.
Mehsoon.com. I was a smart, smart little kid, and I bought my own name. It didn't.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is very smart. Yes.
I'm really lucky. I bought that in 1996. Thinking, you know, someday I'm gonna be huge like Cher. I should just buy my own name. And I bought it, and now I've gotten like a bunch of offers because Mehsoon, Mayson, is two English words that actually mean something together. So
oh,
a
I didn't
lot
even
of
think
people
of that.
Want it.
Oh, that's interesting. Well, it was
yeah.
a good investment.
Yeah.
Good branding for you.
Good branding.
So I was very interested to talk to you about using humor, because you are a stand-up comedian, using humor to talk about very serious issues, you know, like issues surrounding religion and religious intolerance and sexism deployed by religion. And I wanted to highlight this piece you wrote for the Daily Beast last week that came out in the wake of Hamas setting out some edicts regarding sex segregation, gender segregation in schools. And I just want to read a little bit from the first paragraph because it is funny. In the interest of full disclosure, let me state that I hate Hamas. They embody everything that I, as a human being, am fighting against: oppression, religious rule, and patriarchy. They empower Israel while dividing the Palestinians. When Hamas won the parliamentary elections in 2006, I cried like somebody had stabbed my cat. So you go on to talk about various things with regard to Hamas. And do you frequently use humor to discuss urgent issues like this? And how do you think it works with your audience? Do you think that it opens your audience's eyes to something that you're trying to
Yeah.
convey?
So the day that I use my comedy to explain a serious issue or to educate people on a serious issue is the day that I quit being a comedian. The reality is I do comedy about my life, and mm-hmm. the subjects I talk about are part of my world. So I've never gone on stage and been like, you know what, I'm going to explain why Hamas is divisive or why the Israeli occupation is actually based on bigotry, and I'm going to use my comedy to do that. If I ever did that, I shouldn't be a comic. So my goal in life is always one goal and one goal only, and that's to make people laugh. What I use to fuel my comedy are things that anger me. This has always been what I base my comedy on. So whether it's, you know, having someone think I'm drunk instead that I have cerebral palsy, whether it's Obama invoking a law at 5 p.m. on New Year's Eve that kind of cancels out our right to trial, or if it's about Hamas, you know, wrestling guys to the ground and cutting their hair, whatever it is that's pissed me off that day, that's what I'm going to talk about. And unlike most comics who, like, write out their sets and practice their sets, I just come up with stuff. So whatever's on my mind is going to be whatever I'm talking about. And what
So when you go and do stand-up comedy on the weekends, you're riffing on something very recent.
On the weekdays,
present.
On the weekends,
uh-huh.
and it also depends on my mood. Mm-hmm. I'm a stand-up comic, so there's times that I've worked 40 out of 52 weeks, and there's times I've gotten on stage and repeated a bunch of old jokes that are like my best of from the past 10 years because I don't feel like making up something.
Right,
there's
right.
times I never, ever mention being Arab, it's all about Jersey and Hurricane Sandy, you know,
mm-hmm.
and like, so it really does vary. And I feel like it's fun for the people who follow me, you know, because they're always going to expect something different. But then there's the stuff that I talk about all the time, whether it's my family or, you know, the dynamics of being who I am kind of stay the same. But when I started doing stand-up comedy in the Middle East, much, much, much before people in America started to react, people always told me, oh, my God, you're doing something so groundbreaking. And it never occurred to me that it was groundbreaking. It didn't seem like it was a big deal that I was a girl or that I was talking out against the government or that I was totally uncensored. And it wasn't until it became made a big deal that I think people started registering it. And that was basically when the American media started interviewing me and were like, oh my God, you're a woman and you don't cover your hair and you do comedy. And I'm like, yeah, it's actually less of a big deal there than it is here.
Right. So how did you get into doing comedy?
I wanted to be an actress. I wanted to be on a soap opera called General Hospital. And,
you did?
Yeah, and I still do. It's my only reason. I say this with every ounce of honesty, as God is my witness. Every article I write for the Daily Beast, every tweet I tweet, every stand-up show I do, I have one goal and one goal only, and that is to be a daytime character on General Hospital. It's the best work an actor could ever dream of. You're looking at 5 days a week, hair, makeup. You're being challenged every single day with a new script. It never gets boring. So I wanted to be an actor on General Hospital, and I knew that I would never get hired because Hollywood doesn't hire ethnic women. They don't hire heavy ethnic women, and they don't hire ethnic women with disabilities, nor do they hire anyone with a disability. So I thought of people who had made it that were unconventional, like Whoopi Goldberg or, you know, Rosie O'Donnell, Roseanne Barr. I was like, oh, they all started doing comedy. I'll do comedy and I'll get discovered. And I signed up for a class at Caroline's, and within 3 days of doing comedy, I was a professional paid stand-up comic that didn't pay any of my dues.
Well, what would be your dream role on General Hospital? Would you want to be one of the doctors? Would you want to be a lovelorn?
You don't want to be the lovelorn hospital. You don't know nothing about it.
Well, yeah,
there are
I have
no
to admit
doctors
that that's
on
true.
General Hospital anymore. It's basically a mob show. I could care less. I would play any character, any ethnicity, any ability. I don't care. Any gender, anything they gave me, I would take.
All right. Well, yes. Well, you nailed me. It's true. I don't watch General Hospital.
Yeah, no, I knew when you asked if I wanted to be one of the doctors. I'm like, first of all, women on soaps play nurses, not doctors.
Well, I know. I realized that, but I was hoping that maybe things were different now.
There's not a single disabled person on daytime, and there's not a single disabled daytime talk show host. And actually, the only disabled host on all of television is on the cutting edge, very modern Fox News.
Really?
Yes. Me and Charles Hemmecker were the only people until Al Gore dashed my drains out.
So,
shall we talk about Al Gore destroying my life? No? Okay, go ahead.
I have to ask, how did Al Gore destroy
your life? I got my dream gig without knowing it was my dream gig. I ended up getting hired by Keith Olbermann to be a full-time contributor on Countdown with Keith Olbermann. And I got to sit in the lap of luxury of this amazing gig that took my two greatest passions, my three greatest passions, comedy, current events, and makeup. And I got it all balled into one. I got, you know...
So was this when he was at MSNBC still?
I started with him at MSNBC, and then when he went to Current, he hired me full-time. And then Al Gore fired us full-time. And then I didn't have a dream job or any job after that. And so, I have to say, the other, you know, cutting-edge talk show hosts have been really great about putting me on several different issues like women's rights or Palestine or disability or insurance. And by that, I mean Melissa Harris Perry put me on once in the entire year since I've gotten fired from Current with Keith. So no one even puts me on because crooked people are very, very distracting. And when you're editing this video, you'll see it's a nightmare. I'm all over the box.
Well, I don't know.
Oh, great. She takes no responsibility.
So when you, do you ever talk about the occupation or talk about religious intolerance or issues like that in your stand-up? And do you think
I talk about it all the time.
And so how do you think that humor helps people understand? And this is going to sound like a weird question, but do you think that humor helps people understand the gravity of something like that?
No, I think it helps them relate to the reality, not really necessarily feel the gravity. And I think that's what comedy is about. What makes people laugh is if they relate to it. So when I'm talking about, you know, something that's going on with Israel Palestine, I'm doing it in a way that someone from Jersey can totally feel me. So it's not about like, there was an election and a hard-wing right-liner was elected. It's like, yes, yeah, so my husband's not allowed to go to the airport. And so I threw him on the bridge and still went to the airport. So my joke is about what a bad wife I am, because instead of suffering with my husband on the bridge, I take the airport. But the gist of the joke is, why is it that a man who's a naturalized American citizen mm-hmm. is reduced to not being one if he goes back to Israel? That if you're born in Palestine, it trumps the fact that you've become an American citizen and you're reduced to your faith and treated differently regardless of the fact that you carry this passport. So my joke, what makes it relatable is the fact that I'm a bad wife and that I don't care. I'm like, I'm not flying to Jordan, paying an extra $200 and dragging myself across a bridge in the blazing heat when I can fly straight into Tel Aviv. You go ahead and be discriminated against. I'll watch from here. So I think it's about really simplifying something that otherwise we're really bad about talking about. And when I talk about Palestine, Israel, in articles or on Twitter or on Facebook, I always yell at people and say, the language that we use is so confusing that no one knows what we're talking about. And if you just simplify and break it down and stop using words that mean nothing, like occupation, Zionism, IDF, nobody knows what that means. Occupation has taken on a whole nother meaning after the Occupy movement. I'm like, you guys have to use words like, you know, a Jewish American in the West Bank can go to the West Bank, a Palestinian American can't. When you start breaking it down to like, why are these two people of equal status, one is allowed, one's not, and it breaks down to, oh, certain religion has right and certain religions don't, I feel like that's when people understand what we're talking about. So it's about like simplifying your language to make it more relatable. And I think that we, the Palestinians, have been the worst about telling our story because we're always yapping about stuff people don't relate to, like the right of return. Occupation, right of return, IDF, Zionism. Those four words mean absolutely nothing to the average American ear. So when I'm talking to people about why I want a one-state, democratic state with equal rights for all, and people come up against me, they have to come up against me saying that I want equal rights for all. Not some weird abstract thing called the occupation that no one understands. Do you know how many people have asked me if I've ever been to Israel, knowing that I go to Palestine 3 or 4 times a year? People don't understand that they overlap. Mm-hmm. People don't understand that, like, if you're in one, you're in the other. People don't understand there's no way to get in without crossing the other's border.
Right,
you know
right.
what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I think that, like, when people talk about, well, we want it to be a Jewish state, I say, well, I'm an American citizen who lives in a secular state, and I'm all for it being a safe haven for Jews. I'm all for it being, you know, that safe homeland, but I'm not for anyone having special rights because they're a certain faith. It doesn't work for a mindset like mine, where you're raised in New Jersey next to, you know, as I say, Christian Scientologists, Mormons, Jews, Muslims, Hindus, all of us together. You can't mm-hmm. convince me that anything about religious segregation is a positive, that this helps or saves anyone. So when people come up against me, they don't get to say, you want to destroy the Jewish state. You want to expel all the Jews. No, I want equal rights for everyone. Fight me on that. Fight right. me on the concept of everyone being given equal rights and not having to carry around IDs stamped with their religion. You know, one of the things I do make fun of on stage is the fact that Palestinians have to carry IDs with their religion on it, issued mm-hmm. by the Israelis, and you don't get to pick your religion. So if you're Barack Obama, you're Muslim. You have no choice. It doesn't matter that you went to church. It doesn't matter that you were baptized. If you have a Muslim father, you're Muslim. Your papers are going to say that, and you have no choice. So, like,
well,
that's
as you
a
said in
I'll
another piece at the Daily Beast, you're not going to tell the Tea Party that, right?
Yeah. Well, now they know because I'm on Blogging Heads. And I know that the Tea Party watches this.
I don't know either.
Oh, no, they do.
So let's talk about this other piece you did when Obama was going to Israel and Palestine on the trip that he made recently. And you wrote an incredibly detailed piece about, you know, what you would do if you were his tour guide, basically, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, what you would want him to see in contrast to what he did end up seeing when mm-hmm. he went. And a lot of what you point out has to do with how you, even as an American citizen, are treated when you go to Israel, and then to go to Israel to get to the occupied territories.
Not just the occupied territories, because...
But just Israel itself.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Like, people really dismiss the fact that Palestinians are all over Nazareth, Jaffa, mm-hmm. Tel Aviv. I visit friends in Lydd, I visit friends in Haifa, I visit friends in Jerusalem, I visit friends in Deir Dabwan, my village. Like, mm-hmm. this, you know, this was something else I brought up in that article that you said was very detailed. The 1.2 million invisible Palestinians living within what's considered Israel proper. And the reason I say considered is because we all know no borders have ever been declared. So for me to say what is or isn't is really not up to me, because there are no borders. But places like Tel Aviv are recognized as being Israeli. Well, there's hundreds of thousands of Palestinians living there. And it doesn't matter if they've been euphemized and called Israeli Arabs, because all that means is someone who's not Jewish. They don't really mean Israeli Arabs. There are several Israeli Arabs that are Jewish. You have Iraqi Jews, Yemeni Jews. They're not the Israeli Arabs that they're talking about. They're talking about Palestinians that live there. They're talking about Palestinians who have relatives in the West Bank, who have relatives in Gaza. They're talking about the Palestinians who didn't leave. And no one ever talks about these people. So the idea that I jump on a plane to visit the occupied territories is kind of silly to me, because I don't. I have people in that entire area. And I jokingly call it PI, Palestine Israel 3.14, because the reality is you cannot separate these people. All you can do is desegregate. That's it.
So what would you talk a little bit about if you had the opportunity to sit in the back seat of a SUV or limo with President Obama and have your driver
I would probably just continually look at him and go, how disgusted are you with yourself? How much shame do you feel at this moment as we drive through and see that you vetoed the UN resolution that made this religious segregation illegal? You vetoed it. You supported religious segregation. A man who is basically the symbol of the US overcoming its disgusting history of racism by electing a man of color into office sits and advocates a government that discriminates against people based on their faith. Like, I would just keep repeating it over and over. With every poor section we drove through, I would just keep saying over and over, can you really live with yourself just spitting at the legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, spitting at everything that brought you to where you are? Are you cool with that, Mr. President? Who paid you enough to be able to look at yourself when you know you sponsor religious segregation? I just keep repeating it. And I drop him off in Tel Aviv because he wanted to run around Tel Aviv. And I would drop him and his security off and have them run for their lives, because unfortunately, the Africans have been treated atrociously in Tel Aviv. And for the president to naively say that he wanted to run around there in costume shows that he's either disconnected from the fact that he is a black man, or he's disconnected from the reality of just how far the racism in Israel has gotten.
I missed when he said that he wanted to run around Tel Aviv, but...
Yeah, Obama said that he wanted to put on a fake mustache and roam Tel Aviv free so he could really experience it.
Oh.
And I was like, I don't think your security can handle that, sir, because if you're roaming around free, you're going to be discriminated against big time.
So tell me about the work you've done with kids with disabilities in Palestine.
See, Sarah, this is why I know that I never intentionally do comedy about politics, because anytime I do talk politics, I'm about as far from funny as you can get.
Yeah, but I think it's kind of amazing that you can segue from cracking a joke about something to talking about something in a not funny way at all.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of comics cannot get off the funny. You know what I mean?
It's right.
Like they can't move off of that at all.
Yeah.
That's just who they are, and that's their persona in almost any circumstance.
But now that we're talking about disabled orphaned refugee children, I can definitely laugh. I started Maysoon's Kids in April of 2001. The second intifada was in full force, and there were these images of Janina Nablus with a crushed wheelchair. And I saw the wheelchair, and I was like, oh my God, we're creating a whole new generation of disabled kids in a society that doesn't know how to deal with them. I'm going to go there, and I'm going to be their Oprah, right? So I go to Palestine after seeing a movie called Dangerous Minds with Michelle Pfeiffer, where she's this, like, teacher who teaches, like, poetry in the ghetto and gets people to stop getting killed by gangs. And
okay, this is the second piece of proof that our tastes in pop culture are not the same. Go ahead.
Dangerous Minds? Okay, well, you have to look up Dangerous Minds because I based my entire stupid trip on it.
Okay.
So I go to Palestine thinking I'm going to be both Oprah and Michelle Pfeiffer, and I'm going to save these people and get them to do theater to express themselves so that they don't throw rocks, and I'm going to get the disabled kids, like, top-notch education. And I got to Palestine, I was like, oh, wait, they need shoes. And, like, I was totally overwhelmed. And I spent a couple of years kind of just giving people fish. You know, we brought shoes for the orphans and diapers and milk, and we fed people during Ramadan, and we brought glasses. And then I was like, wait a minute, stop. Everything that we're doing is expendable. This is not what they need. So Maysoon's Kids shifted its vision to what it is now, a scholarship and wellness program that focuses on the right to education and the right to play. So we provide scholarships in an effort to mainstream children and Palestinian children from really low-income families to the private schools that do mainstream kids with physical disabilities, because unfortunately, if they're not mainstreamed, they're basically left in these glorified babysitting centers,
right,
called rehab centers that don't do anything and don't teach them anything. So we're trying our best to get them mainstreamed. We're trying to develop a home study program that can be used community-based. So even if the mom isn't ready to teach, maybe one of the moms in the community is, and she can teach a couple of the kids that aren't able to get mainstreamed. We partner with Playgrounds for Palestine, and we build disabled accessible playgrounds for children with no place to play that are also awesome for kids without disabilities. I teach mommy classes, so we try to teach the moms how to live life with a disabled child and how to make sure that you don't neglect their siblings by focusing too much on them, or neglect them by focusing too much on the able-bodied siblings. And we just, you know, kind of go one village, one refugee camp at a time, trying to get as many kids in school as we can, trying to get as many kids mainstreamed as we can, and, you know, just kind of being overwhelmed.
So you spend part of the year there and part of the year in the United States.
Yeah,
so
I go back.
Do you have people there who sort of shoulder the load of the
no.
work?
No. One of the things I made sure I did was Maysoon's Kids partners with different organizations.
Oh, okay.
And all the organizations we partner with are U.S.-based 501c3s. So you can always go to Maysoon.com and support any of the charities that we work with and know that it's tax deductible and you're not going to get thrown into Guantanamo for donating to a terrorist organization. I go back and forth to Palestine because I don't trust anyone. And even though I love and trust the organizations that we work with, I still go there and make sure that every project that we're affiliated with is executed correctly. So
you're not a delegator.
No. I trust no one. I watch the X-Files. I got you. I finally got something you watch.
No.
Oh, damn. Come on. The X-Files. You're a
I'm
nerd.
I'm really sorry.
You're
I have, like, very
Sarah
limited
nerd.
Television viewing habits.
But you're called Sarah Nerd. How are you a nerd that never saw the X-Files? I don't think you're a nerd. I think you're Mossad.
No. I just have extremely limited TV.
Have you ever watched Oprah? Do you know who Oprah is?
I know who Oprah is,
okay. Yeah. Do you think that Meryl Streep could ever play Oprah?
No.
Okay. Well, that brings me to my next topic. Non-disabled actors should not play disabled characters. That is all. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Well, so I think we learned a lot about you and also a lot about me.
Yeah, I think so.
More about what I don't watch.
Sarah, where are you?
Hmm?
Where are you?
I'm in D.C.
Oh, nice. Awesome. I'm in D.C. a lot. I like it there.
Well, we'll have to have lunch the next time you are here.
And then we can record stuff live. I like the fact that I didn't think about the fact that I couldn't hold the telephone until the time to actually hold it came. Wait a minute.
It all worked out great, nonetheless. Okay. So if somebody wanted to see you do stand-up, do you have YouTube videos? Is there some place where you appear frequently?
If you go to maysoon.com, there's a bunch of videos and links on there with stuff that you can watch online, and also my schedule that tells you where you can see me live. And I always say to people, you want to see comedy live, it's totally different. But there's all of my Keith Olbermann clips because, you know, he's like my mentor and my hero. So I have all my Keith Olbermann clips up. And I have some great stand-up that I did live and online and stuff that people can see. And more crazy, angry articles about equality.
Okay. Are they crazy?
Yeah. Everything I write is crazy. I always say, like, anyone who reads what I write without having that little bit of them that realizes that I'm absolutely bonkers is not going to understand it and is either going to become angry or radicalized.
Okay. Well, do you really want to sell yourself as crazy?
Yeah.
I'm doing air quotes here.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm definitely not your average Molly. Listen, I swim against the stream. I do not know a single lawmaker other than Keith Ellison that's willing to come out for equality. It's not normal. You can't say it's not crazy to be for equality, or else more people would be for it, right?
Well, I think it's more complicated than that. But why don't we do another Blogging Heads about why that is?
Yeah, ask people if they think that wanting equality is just nuts or not, and you'll see 58% will say it is. Sarah, it was so nice meeting you. I can't wait to meet again. Thank you.
Thank you, Maysoon.